think that the next hour is going to be quite a wild ride with our next guest, Dr. Donald Hoffman. He's a cognitive psychologist, a popular science author, almost to the point of theoretical science, and some of this is going to go to. He's a professor in the Department of Cognitive Sciences at the University of California, Irvine, with joint appointments in the Department of Philosophy. The book that he has written here, that which will be the focus of our discussion, The Case Against Reality, pretty odd cover, peculiar, provocative color, Why Evolution Hid the Truth from Our Eyes. Donald Hoffman. Donald, it's a pleasure to have you. Welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. I've been talking you up all morning here and this discussion. I've been looking forward to this. I think our audience will also feel the same. Give us just a brief overview. Who is Donald Hoffman? And then let's The Case Against Reality. What is this book? What are you claiming here?
So, as you mentioned, I'm a professor at the University of California at Irvine. I teach cognitive science, and I do mathematical models of visual perception. So it turns out that we can, with mathematical precision, predict in many cases what you will see, when you will see three-dimensional objects, how you'll see them move, and so forth. So we write down mathematical models, do experiments with human subjects, and build computer vision systems. So, we want to have driverless cars, where the cars can see the road and be intelligent. Well, to do that, we need to have computers that can look through cameras and see the world through those cameras. And so the question is, how do you see objects and colors and motions, when you're looking through video cameras? That all they give you is numbers, that it's this bright over here at this pixel, and it's this bright at this pixel, and this bright at this pixel. How do you go from those pixel brightnesses to, oh, that's a boy riding a bicycle, I better break the car? And so it turns out we've been making great progress reverse engineering human neurophysiology, human neuroscience, and we now have mathematically precise models that let us see how, to recognize objects and, see colors and shapes and motions and so forth. So I try to do that kind of thing. And then I look at it with through the lens of evolution by natural selection. The question I've asked in the book is, did evolution by natural selection favor organisms that see reality as it is, at least in part, to see the parts of reality that you need to stay alive or not? And so my book goes into that question. And most of my colleagues, most of the professors who study evolution by natural selection or cognitive science, assume that organisms that see reality as it is will be more fit, will be more likely to survive and reproduce than organisms that do not see reality as it is. And the argument seems plausible. They'll say that, look, organisms that see reality as it is have a competitive advantage over those who do not see reality as it is in the important tasks of everyday life, like feeding, fighting, fleeing, and mating, the big stuff. And so they'll be more likely to pass on their genes that code for the more accurate perceptions. And so we're the offspring of those who in each generation have seen reality more accurately, so we can be confident that in the normal situations, we see reality pretty much as it is. Again, not all of reality, just the parts that we need to stay alive. And it turns out that evolution by natural selection is a mathematically precise theory now. We have something called evolutionary game theory. So we don't actually have to speculate and wave our hands about the implications of the theory. We can actually run computer simulations and prove theorems. And so that's what I've done with my graduate students and collaborators. We've used evolutionary game theory to ask the very technical question, did evolution shape our perceptions to show us aspects of reality as it is? And we can go into it, but the answer is absolutely not.
Okay. Well, that's a big discussion on its own. Let me go back a little bit. I've skimmed some of your book. I'm fascinated at some parts of it. It's way above my head. I need to go back and read. I mean, that's how complicated this is. Let me ask you this question. Maybe we'll start here. We're taught, and kind of the idea or concept we're given as people on this planet is that, you know, we talked about this on the break before we came on, that the Earth's been around for millions, billions of years, what have you, that the sun, the stars, the rocks, it exists separate from us, the perceiver, we perceive it, and that we're just a small role in this and come here at this time and then we'll go away and we'll evolve. We're really not part of the bigger story, or we're a small part. What many scientists, many quantum scientists, first-rate scientists are starting to see, and I want to get where you fall on this, that's really not true, that the perceivers are much more part of the story, much more part of making this world than we ever imagined. Your thought there?
Yes, I agree with you. So the standard story is the universe, space-time itself, came into existence around 13.8 billion years ago in the Big Bang. And it was an unconscious, lifeless universe at the beginning. And life emerged who knows how many hundreds of millions of years later, and then consciousness after that. And here we are 13.8 billion years later, small bit players on the pre-existing stage of space-time. And I'm saying that view is inconsistent with the logical implications of evolution by natural selection. Evolution by natural selection entails that space-time is something that we create right now. It's a form of our perception. So we're not little bit players in space-time. We're the authors of the entire thing. We create space-time in the moment. It's just a data structure that we use to represent fitness payoffs and how to get them. And so the standard physicalist assumption about space-time being fundamental contradicts another standard theory of science, namely evolution by natural selection. So we have a dilemma here.
Okay, so have you seen the movie The Matrix?
Yes.
I would have to imagine that you would. Of all the people, I imagine that kind of was right up your alley. There's a scene in the movie, I don't know if you remember, where Neo goes to meet the Oracle for the first time, and there's small children in the living room, and they're playing and bending spoons. And Neo tries to bend the spoon, and the child says, "It's not that I'm bending spoon; that there never was a spoon there to begin with." Is that
That's
kind
right.
of
there is no spoon?
There is no spoon.
That's right.
What is that little freaky looking child in her living room? What does they mean by that? And how does that relate to your book?
Right. I agree with the child that there is no spoon in the following sense. Of course, when I look at a dining table and it's all set, and I say, "Oh yeah, there's a fork and a spoon," you can look and you can say, "Oh yeah, I agree, there's a fork and a spoon." But what I'm saying is different. Most of us think that, well, that means that there is an objective reality in which there is a fork and a spoon that would exist even if no one were there to perceive it. It's objective in that sense, objectively real. It would exist even if there were no creatures to perceive it. And that's what the spoon boy was denying. When he says there is no spoon, he wasn't denying that we experience a spoon. He was denying that there's anything that like a spoon beyond our experience. There is something beyond our experience, but whatever it is, it's not a spoon. And that's what I'm saying as well. There is a reality that exists even if I don't perceive it, but it's not a space-time reality, and it doesn't have spoons. Spoons and space-time are just the symbols that we create. And we can talk about the user interface idea that I bring up here, but I will say this. One thing about The Matrix where I'm going well beyond The Matrix is this. In The Matrix, when you're in The Matrix, space and time and all the objects that you perceive aren't real. They're just being created by you in your mind. But in The Matrix, it's being done by your brain. So your brain is real. It's a real physical object. And the world outside The Matrix, once Neo unplugs from The Matrix, it's a real physical space-time world in which there really are brains. So I'm being more radical. I'm saying, no, whatever is behind space and time is not space and time. It's utterly unlike space and time. And neurons and brains themselves do not exist when they're not perceived. So to be very, very clear, right now I don't have a brain. and I have no neurons. If someone were to look inside my head, they would see brains and neurons, but that's because they would be creating them in their perceptions in the act of looking. There is a reality, but it's not brains and neurons, and it's nothing in space and time. And that's hard for most people to wrap their heads around, but that's
right,
what the theory of evolution entails.
All right. Do you, I mean, when you talk to your peers at college and what have you, and you tell them these things, do they look at you like you're crazy, or do they listen to you?
Well, they listen to me because I published a theorem. And I published simulations. And so I'm giving talks. I gave a talk at the University of California, Davis, a while ago. I don't know, 80 neuroscientists, postdocs and professors and grad students, all of them world-class experts in neuroscience. And you know, they invited me. They knew what I was going to say. And I said flat out, neurons do not exist when they're not perceived. And here's the argument from evolution. And, you know, I invite them to contradict me, to take me on. And
okay.
They can't.
Okay. I'm going to put this in terms, you know, I haven't read all of your book. I look forward to being able to, but I'm going to throw this out there. I don't know, say a spiritual, a biblical point of view, and then get okay. your feelings there. Okay. Even Roman mythology, Greek mythology with Ares, the gods were mad at Zeus. I always mix up the different gods of Zeus or whatever because Zeus gave fire to man. So Ares was mad, should have it wasted consciousness or fire giving to man. They wasted it. And Ares' job then became to show the gods what a mistake they made and how he can manipulate mankind into doing all kinds of evil. That's Greek mythology, Roman mythology, has a counterpart. The Bible would say in Genesis, I'm skipping a lot of things here, but the Bible says dominion was given to man. Something divine, whether it's scriptural, whether it's mythology, something divine was given to mankind. I'm of the belief, and the more I study scientists like yourself, other people, the more I get these concepts. I'm trying to make sense of science and religion. And to me, religion and science have never been more mirrored than the stuff that you're doing. Because what you're telling me, you correct me, is that there is something inside me, mankind, you, all of us, there's something inside us, this perception, this consciousness, that is divine. It is bigger than the world we see, and it actually creates the world we see, and we are co-creators and have dominion over all that we see. Would that, how would you react to what I just said?
Yeah, I would say that it's roughly on track in the following sense. I agree that the standard view of my colleagues that the physical world, space, time, and physical objects is fundamental and that we're just small players in that, that's contradicted by evolution, by natural selection. So they can't have both. The theory I'm working on is very similar to what you're saying, but it's a mathematical theory. I'm working on a theory in which, what is the reality? I'm proposing it is consciousness, like human consciousness, but not just human consciousness. An infinite social network of what I call conscious agents. That are interacting. And so human consciousness is just one of a veritable infinity of different forms of consciousness. And, you know, ours is not the highest, it's not the lowest, it's not special. It's just one of a vast social network of conscious agents that are interacting. And think about it like the Twitterverse, right? There are tens of millions of Twitter users, billions of tweets, lots of stuff trending. Any specific Twitter user could not look at all the tweets or interact with all the Twitter users. It's overwhelming. So how do you get a grasp of what's going on there? Well, we use visualization tools, things that simplify the social network and give us simple eye candy that lets us, you know, visualize the big data. And I'm saying that's what space, time, and physical objects are. These are our visualization tool that we've evolved to interact with this vast social network of interacting conscious agents. And human, so consciousness, like human consciousness, but not just human consciousness, is fundamental. But there are essentially an infinite variety of different kinds of consciousness out there and conscious agents. And we, our interface gives us only a small glimpse of this essentially infinite complexity, this vast social network, on purpose because we would be overwhelmed. We couldn't deal with it all. And so space, time, and physical objects are just the simple visualization tools that we have to deal with that. And so we make a simple rookie mistake. We mistake our visualization tool for the reality. We mistake space and time for the objective reality. But to get an idea about what I'm saying concretely, I think it really helps to bring it home. Just imagine looking at your face in the mirror. What you see literally in the mirror is just skin, hair, and eyes. That's all you see. But what you know firsthand but can't see in the mirror is that behind that face is the rich world of your conscious experiences, your hopes, your dreams, your aspirations, your headache, your fears, the love for chocolate and certain kinds of music. All that rich world of your conscious experiences is hidden behind a very simple symbol, your face. And so the symbol itself is just a portal. Your face, when I see your face and your body, that's just a portal to your consciousness. And so I can actually interact with you and affect your experiences, your emotions, your thoughts by talking with you and interacting with you. So our visualization tool, our interface tool of space and time and objects, is simply providing us portals into the realm of conscious agents. With humans, we have a better portal. When I interact with my cat, my portal isn't quite as good. I don't know exactly what it's like to be a cat. When I interact with an ant, my portal is very, very dim. And when I come down to things that I call rocks and dirt and so forth, stones, my portal, my interface has given up. My visualization tool has given up. But no surprise, the whole point of the visualization tool was to simplify and at some point ignore most of the reality because you can't deal with the whole complexity. So space, time, and physical objects are just our user interface. Think of it like, go ahead.
You mentioned there's lots of other consciousness that mankind, human consciousness is one construct. We're living or we're experiencing, I guess, jointly this human consciousness. You correct me if I'm, I'm trying to follow what you're saying here. So we're all experiencing on this one level. We're here, let's push aside God or something bigger or creator, but just right now, speaking here right now, we're experiencing this consciousness. There's other levels of consciousness. There's other types of consciousness. I want to ask you, and I didn't want to go here so quickly, but you kind of led this right in. Is there, what would you say? We're a carbon-based consciousness, but is there a silicone-based consciousness? Is there a computer-based consciousness, an AI consciousness possibility?
Very good question. That's a burning question right now in our society because AI is now, taking off in ways that we hadn't expected it to take off. It's doing amazing things. And so there is the question. The standard view of that question is, could we get silicon circuits and software to be sophisticated enough somehow that consciousness would arise? So the idea is that the fundamental reality is not conscious. Space, time, and atoms and quantum fields and so forth are just unconscious and go according to certain rules, behave according to certain laws of physics, and they're not conscious. But if you get them in complicated enough patterns and dynamical circuits and so forth, then maybe the magic of consciousness will happen. And most of my colleagues think of the problem that way, and most would say that, eventually we'll be able to get computing machines to create consciousness. After all, the brain is just a computing machine. And
how would you define consciousness? Define consciousness for me, or at least the best you can.
Oh, yeah. So the issues of consciousness that I'm dealing with come up with the very simplest forms. Your experience of the taste of chocolate, what it's like to have a sip of chocolate, that experience, the smell of garlic, the feeling of a headache, things that I would expect a rat would have. Rats, I presume, feel pain, and they taste cheese and so forth. So I don't need to go to really higher forms of consciousness like self-awareness or altered, elaborate states of consciousness. Just the mere experience of a sensory perception, the color red, or a headache already raises all the important problems of consciousness that I'm trying to understand. And that, by the way, my physicalist colleagues readily admit that they can't explain. We have no way yet, as a scientific theory, to start with physical systems like neural activity or, you know, computer circuits, AI, and boot up consciousness, simple conscious experiences like the taste of vanilla. We have no idea how to do that. How could sodium and potassium and calcium and other ions, you know, shuttling back and forth through holes in neural membranes or shuttling within inside of neurons or systems of neurons, how can you go from that to my taste of experience of the taste of vanilla?
So,
no one has any idea how to do that.
Well, it sounds like you're, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. It sounds like the Supreme Court justice who says, well, I can't define pornography, but I know what it is when I see it. So basically you're telling me it's really hard to define, but once you have it, we know that you have it.
Well, I do have a definition. And I've published it. It's a mathematically precise definition. But in so, I mean, I can
no,
tell
let's
you
not
the precise
there.
Definition,
let's, yeah,
but
let's,
it, yeah, it wouldn't
listen,
be
yeah,
nice
let's not
to
go there.
The audience.
Buy the book.
But so I'll just say that at the back of my book, there is an appendix, and I give my mathematically precise definition of what I call conscious agents. So if anybody wants, you know, to go past the hand waves and into the mathematics, it involves measurable structures and Markovian kernels, and people can look at that if they want to.
Okay. Is man the dominant consciousness then? You said the perceiver is involved in the creation. Is man the dominant consciousness here?
Absolutely not. We're just part of an infinite variety of consciousnesses, and it's a rookie mistake to think that we're special or the highest. It's again, it's mistaking the limits of our perception and our interface for a deeper reality.
That's fascinating. We'll address that on the other side. There's the music. The book is The Case Against Reality, Why Evolution Hid the Truth from Our Eyes, Dr. Donald Hoffman. This is fantastic. I really look forward to this. I'm sad it's only an hour. We need only probably about 4 hours before I can basically understand the very beginning of this. But we have 30 more minutes. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Hour, and I wanted to let you know about the Mastering Vaccine Information Bootcamp from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, an 8-week online intensive training course that covers herd immunity and the truth about what safe and effective really means. Most importantly, you will learn key concepts to stand your ground. The course information coupled with the language training is what makes this course both unique and powerful. Open enrollment is from September 26th through October 1st. Sign up by visiting MasteringVaccineInfo.com.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
My uncle and I and Todd spent all the break trying to decipher what in the world we've been talking about. This is very high-level stuff. I mean, I understand some of it, and I understand basic things and how to put it into, but this is so good to have Dr. Donald Hoffman on. This book, I highly recommend. What I have looked at so far, I am fascinated by. I haven't read the whole thing. I am looking forward to it. The Case Against Reality is the book, Why Evolution Hid the Truth from Our Eyes. I want to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, of the Power Mall, all the specials, Robert Redfern, the Curcumin, what have you, the flash sale on good... OxyPowder, detox foot pads, the vitamin B12, and the, a vegan safe, or the detoxidine and the vitamin B12. All flash sale. Anything that you buy, Dr. Group, you know, he flooded because of what happened in Houston. You buy any purchase, then you can buy that for 15% off. We can't even advertise that online because of our agreements with them. It's just a flash sale of a couple days. Today is the last day. Or if you call and leave a message, we will honor today. Take advantage of that. I think you're going to benefit from that and all the other great products. Also, Vaxter.com, MasteringVaccineInfo.com. Dr. Tenpenny, we really want to promote that and hope that you take advantage of that. She has a lot of specials and giveaways, what have you. But thepowermall.com, yeah, 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829 is the phone number. Thank you so much for your purchases and donations and the like. Getting back to Dr. Hoffman, Donald Hoffman. I can't even talk about the Power Mall. You got my brain going in a million different ways. I'm using parts of my brain that I haven't, or parts of my consciousness, because my brain's not really there, right? So parts of my consciousness.
Right.
Let me ask you this question. I think this is the $64,000 question. This is where maybe the Bible and science really have been at odds for a long time. I think that science is starting to change on this, and something else is coming out of it. But I was taught in school, basically, the Big Bang Theory, that's where everything started, and then centuries and millennium and whatever, billions and billions of years, there was some primordial soup, and just by chance it happened on this earth, and then some organisms came out of the soup and then evolved and then came from, one-celled amoebas to rabbits to monkeys. To then evolved into humans. Okay, we were taught that like mother's milk, like it was absolute fact. I have such a hard time believing it at its core, especially going with what you have told me, what you have said here, is that creation does not, or consciousness does not occur after creation. Creation occurs after consciousness. So to me, these two stories just don't jive.
Right. I agree in the following sense. I think that consciousness is fundamental, and it's prior to space and time. It's prior to the Big Bang. And so the fundamental physicalist story that we've been told has to be deeply wrong. But in an interesting way, I think that
hold on one second. Sure. I didn't mean to cut you off, and it sounds like you're getting to an important point. But I hate harping on this, but this is, I think, in the title of your book, Why Evolution Has Hid the Truth from Our Eyes. Let me go back to this point again. I think this is such a dominant educational concept for where we are, not only legally, but lawfully, our perceptions of life, where we're our value system has been so rotted and shaped by that idea that this, we came from some primordial soup and then consciousness evolved from that. It is a lie. I mean, would it be too strong to say that is not true? It is a lie.
I would say, of course, I wouldn't say that my colleagues are trying to lie, right? Lying is an intentional misdirection.
Okay.
So they're certainly not liars in that sense. I think that they sincerely believe what they're proposing. I just think that they're sincerely wrong. I disagree with my colleagues on this, but they're good friends and we're quite congenial and we have good discussions about this. And there's no evil or malicious intent at all. And for their part, they also are very, very kind to me, even though they disagree with me. But I agree with you in the following sense.
How quaint of them.
Well, yeah, it's in the spirit of collegiality.
Well, what it does, Donald, it's two competing constructs of reality. It's basically what
Absolutely.
You're saying. They are putting forth a construction of reality that I don't think is true. It sounds like you don't believe the basis of it's true. So
right.
Then what is the truth? Let's talk about that.
Right. Right. So I agree that it's, from my point of view, the fundamental reality is this vast network of interacting consciousnesses. That's fundamental. And that our particular form of consciousness, the human consciousness, uses space and time and physical objects as a user interface to help simplify our interactions with all these other consciousnesses. Otherwise, we'd be overwhelmed. What science has done right now, so our theories of physics, like quantum field theory, general relativity, our theories of biology, like evolution by natural selection, these are only theories about how our interface works. They're not theories about the ultimate nature of reality. So whatever deeper theory, I'm working with colleagues to have a theory of consciousness that's mathematically precise, dynamics of consciousness, and one constraint on that deeper theory will be that when we project this dynamics of consciousness back into space and time, our interface, we need to get back modern physics, like general relativity, quantum field theory, and we need to get back evolution by natural selection as the way that we would see the deeper dynamics within the limitations of our interface. So it's not like I want to throw away the current science. I'm saying it's not correct because space-time itself is not fundamental. On the other hand, all the hard work that my colleagues have done is not wasted. It will be a boundary condition or a constraint on my deeper theory of the evolution of consciousness itself. And so you brought up also the relationship of science and religion, and that's very important to me. My father was a minister, a fundamentalist Christian minister, and so I've been raised in that kind of background, and then also studied science, and my attitude is that science and religion can, I think, and should eventually have a really interesting collaboration. I think that they each have a piece of the puzzle. The various religious traditions, including Christianity, but also Eastern mystical traditions, have the idea that consciousness is fundamental, not space and time. And I think there, Christianity and religious, various spiritual traditions are right, and the science has been wrong. On the other hand, science has this amazing methodology where the idea is you have to be precise in your claims and state exactly what someone could do, an experiment they could do to try to show you wrong. And science as a discipline, as a social institution, is not dogmatic. Of course, individual scientists are as dogmatic as anybody. But as an institution, science weeds out dogmatism. It says, I mean, for example, it allows someone like me, my scientific colleagues allow someone like me to come and say to them, evolution by natural selection has a limited scope. It's only true within space-time. It's not true deeply. Physical, space and time are not fundamental. Neurons don't exist. I'm allowed to say that to them, but the reason I'm allowed to say that, and they listen to me, they invite me to give colloquium, they argue with me, is because I'm playing by the rules. I'm giving them mathematically precise arguments for why I'm saying this. I'm telling them exactly what they would need to do to show me wrong. So because I'm playing by the rules, they're good with it. They may not like my conclusions, but they know that I'm playing by the rules. And so that kind of bringing the two together, the insights of the spiritual tradition that consciousness is fundamental on the one hand, and then the wonderful methodology of the sciences, which is be precise, don't be dogmatic, and tell us precisely how we could show you to be wrong. If we bring those two things together, we could have a scientific spirituality where the really deepest questions that are very important to us, who are we? Why are we here? What is this all about? What is good? What's evil? Why is there pain? What is death and what is suffering? We can actually try to address these questions, taking insights from spiritual traditions, but then fashioning really precise hypotheses that are testable. So I'm all for a collaboration between science and spirituality, but the difficulty on either side would be this. On the science side, the problem is letting go of physicalism. And I'm working with them on that. But they have to let go of physicalism and recognize, I think, that consciousness is fundamental. On the spiritual side, it's letting go of dogmatism. Admit that we could be wrong. That on anything that we say that we believe, try to ask what evidence would allow me to change my position. So we have to let go of dogmatism because dogmatism stops progress. So getting those two together, a non-dogmatic scientific approach to the deep spiritual questions is what I'm after.
Well, that's fantastic. Let me tell you what I'm thinking of. You used to use the word insight, and I actually had it written down, instinctual, instinct. You know, religion or spiritual things, I can speak for me personally, they instinctually give me clues about who I am, the universe, where we're headed, and they provide, and on a scientific level, that's evidence. I mean, right? That's a clue. That's something I can measure. I can feel it, what have you. One of the hesitancies, somebody who comes from a religious background about dogmatism, I'll tell you where the big hesitancy mm-hmm. comes, is
sure.
when, now we're having this discussion, and for 50 years plus in this country, the theory of evolution that we have basically just picked apart, the part of it that we have really analyzed and don't agree with, shoved down our throats to the point where if you believe in God, if you believe in this, then you're a fool, then in my mind, you know, I'm just going to go the other way. Well, I don't believe anything you say. I'll just stick with the Bible. I'll just stick with my interpretation of the Bible, and I don't care. Even if my preacher may be a little wrong, or they may be a little dogmatic, or they may be whatever, they're a heck of a lot closer than my science teacher. So let me just stick with my preacher. And people will get, they get real dogmatic about that. And I understand that. And I think that you, I mean, you would too. Cause now look where science is coming around. Science is, you just told me that consciousness precedes creation, not creation preceding consciousness, which is basically the fundamental idea of the Bible. You just described that the preachers have been right all this time.
Well, yeah, so I don't want the two sides to go in their corners and you know,
right.
Wall off conversation.
But I can just tell you why they have.
Don't want to go. Right, no, I understand.
I can just tell you why they have.
Oh, I know firsthand. I was raised in both cultures very, very deeply. And I think that both have a piece of the puzzle. Again, I agree with you that consciousness is fundamental, not space and time. And the idea that evolution by natural selection itself is fundamental is not correct. It's, you know, from my point of view as a scientist, I think evolution by natural selection is an incredibly beautiful theory. It's very, very powerful. I think that quantum mechanics is a very, very beautiful theory in general. These are all incredibly beautiful theories, but they assume that space, time, and matter are fundamental, and so they are fundamentally limited. There's a deeper point of view. But now what we want to do is to take the insight of the spiritual traditions that consciousness is fundamental and turn that into a mathematically precise claim. So what does it mean to say that consciousness is fundamental? And really write down the equations. That's what I'm working with, Chetan Prakash and Chris Fields and Federico Fugin and my collaborators. We're working on getting a mathematically precise model of consciousness. What we want to do then, once we have that, first it will give more specificity to the claims of the spiritual traditions. We're making those claims precise. But then the nice thing is it will then eventually dovetail with current science. It's not going to be an all-out refutation. It'll be the following. The current theories only go so far. You know, quantum theory, evolution by natural selection are beautiful theories, but they're stuck in space-time. But whatever deeper theory we come up with of how consciousness evolves will have to look like evolution by natural selection. It'll have to look like quantum field theory when we look at it through the lens of our own space and time interface. And that will be how we get testable predictions on the spiritual ideas. So we'll take them, make them mathematically precise in terms of, for example, I'm working on a theory of conscious agents. But when we project it into space-time, we have to get back our current scientific theories, or we're wrong. And that's, by the way, that's really fun for me because it's hard to know what is the dynamics of consciousness all about. And we're working on that, but, you know, that's a pretty deep question. So what we may do is say, look, maybe this is what consciousness is doing. We'll write down that dynamics. We'll project it back into space and time, and we'll look and say, does it match evolution by natural selection? If it doesn't, well, then we got our equations of consciousness wrong, so we'll have to go back. So you can see that at one level, evolution is contradicting the deeper spiritual ideas. On a deeper level, they're not contradictory. It's just that evolution was a stepping stone that we needed to the deeper theory, and the deeper theory will have to look like evolution when we project it into space and time. So that ultimately we'll realize that you know, there is a serious fight here. And I agree, it's been for 50, 100 years. It's been very, very bitter and so forth. But there's this deeper point of view in which we can collaborate. The evolutionary biologists will have to let go of their physicalism. And the spiritual traditions will want to get very precise and rigorous, mathematically precise, and then the two sides will actually meet. And it will be fabulous because then we will begin to take the spiritual questions and address them rigorously with mathematical precision and experiments. Mm. And I'm really excited about that.
You got me excited. I don't even understand it all, and I'm excited. There's a couple things I want to discuss here in the time that we have. I hope that you come on, you know, in a couple months. I hope you come back to get into some deeper. I mean, we're just really touching the surface here. I really enjoyed talking to you. You mentioned there is no perception without a perceiver. So you correct me if I'm wrong. Basically, there is no pen in my hand. There is no chair I'm sitting in. There is no sun in the sky. There is no clouds. There is none of this. It's like the old question, if a tree falls in a forest and no one is there, will it make a sound? The answer is no, it doesn't. If there's no perceiver, then there is nothing to perceive. There's no perception. Is that accurate? Am I on the right track? And explain that a little more clearly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm saying that that space and time themselves do not exist unless they're perceived. And your space and time is what you create. My space and time is what I create. What the moon that I see is the moon that I put up there in the sky. There is some deeper objective reality. I'm proposing it's this network of conscious agents. That's the objective reality. It's not anything in space and time. It's not the sun and the moon. The sun and the moon are just simply the simple symbols that I use in my dumbed down visualization tool. And they're created when I look, so I create the moon when I look, and I destroy it when I look away. I'll give a metaphor that I think is very, very helpful. It's the user interface on your computer. Suppose you're writing an email, and the icon for your email is blue and rectangular in the middle of your screen. Does that mean that the email itself in your computer is blue and rectangular and in the middle of the computer? Of course not. And anybody who thought that misunderstands the point of the interface. The interface is not there to show you the truth, which in this metaphor would be the circuits and software and voltages of
the
computer.
That's a great analogy.
It really brings it home, because the interface is there explicitly to hide all that truth. You don't want to know the truth. It gets in the way of doing what you need to do. If you had to toggle voltages to write an email, your friends would never hear from you. And so that's what we have. Space and time and physical objects are here explicitly to hide the truth.
Let me stop.
It's just to keep us alive.
Okay, let me interject. Again, I'm getting back to the matrix, because this is how my basic mind can understand this. There's a point where they look at the matrix and then they're out of the matrix. So the operators, when they're looking into the matrix and they're watching it, they're not watching pictures and things. They're watching physical code. They're sitting there watching the world, and they see the code, and they know what the code means and what it correlates to the symbols. It's just like your computer screen. It's not like, you know, when you get an email, some blue symbol or something, flag or mail with a stamp on it is sitting there in your computer. It's a code. It's a symbol which helps you to interact with it and perceive the situation of a whole back end. So you're saying that there is an objective reality. It's just not what we are looking at or what we perceive that we're looking at.
Exactly. And that's what the spiritual traditions have been saying for a long time, that space and time are not the fundamental reality.
I feel like I need a degree. I think I just earned a degree listening to you.
So this really does substantiate the basic claims of the spiritual traditions, that space time is not fundamental, that there's a deeper reality, and that deeper reality is more fundamentally conscious. And I'm saying, think about this interface metaphor, that the icons on the desktop, you know, their colors and shapes do not indicate that something of that color and that shape is inside the computer. They're just there, to let you interact with the reality, even though you're utterly ignorant about its true nature. And in fact, the simplification is what's helpful. Here's an objection that people give to me. They say, look, Hoffman, if you think that that train coming down the tracks at 200 miles an hour is just an icon in your interface, why don't you step in front of it? And after you're dead and your theory with you, we'll know that the train was real, and it really can kill. And I wouldn't step in front of the train for the same reason that I wouldn't carelessly take that blue icon and drag it to the trash can. Not because I take the icon literally. The file is not literally blue and rectangular. But I do take that icon very seriously. If I drag that icon carelessly to the trash, I could lose all my work. So I have to take my symbols seriously, but that does not entail or even entitle me to take them literally. So, I take the training seriously, but that doesn't mean that I'm entitled to take it literally.
Okay, two questions. Let me get out both of them before you answer, because we're running out of time. there is something as a shared consciousness. So, you know, you may see the train and may have one perception of it, and then everybody else looking at the train has a different. You may think there's no train there. You may totally believe there's no train there. Jump in front of it. The people perceive that you get run over, and then in some other existence or what have you, because you perceive that there is no train there, you are still existing and you went through the train. Is that even possible? Yes, just yes or no.
Hold on.
Stop there. Hold on. I have to ask this. Okay. 2 minutes left. We have 2 minutes. And please come back on in a couple months so we can go more at this.
Sure.
The scripture in the Bible, all things are possible to him that believeth. Would you say basically in this construction of reality, in this level, mankind's level here, basically what Jesus says in the Bible, that's 100% true. All things are possible to him that believeth. Our belief, our perception.
Well, I think that once we understand this deeper level of consciousness and how it works and write down the equations and understand its relationship to our space-time interface, we will unleash technologies that will look miraculous to us. And so in that sense, the kinds of limitations and so forth that we have right now are due to our lack of understanding of this deeper level of consciousness. And once we get a scientific theory of it and how it relates to space and time and what looks like evolution by natural selection within our interface, we will perhaps be able to do things like walk on water and make food abundant without just like the cell phone today. If you'd shown someone what we're doing with cell phones a century ago, it would look like a miracle, right?
Right.
New technologies are miraculous, and so
right.
I think that's just a warm up. The new technologies will be much greater.
Wow. Turn that music down just a little bit, Todd. Let me go out with him. Donald, there's the music. There's the end of our broadcast. The name of the book is The Case Against Reality, Dr. Donald Hoffman. Is there a website? I didn't even check. Is there a website we can check this out?
Yes. If you just Google Donald Hoffman, Hoffman, I think my homepage comes up as one of the first things that comes up in Google. Or Donald Hoffman.
It's been an absolute fantastic. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. We got probably 20 or 30 seconds. I can't wait to have you on again in a couple months. The last 15, 20 seconds is yours, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you. I would just say that think about this interface metaphor that we don't see reality as it is. It's all just icons and behind it is this vast realm of consciousness. So, we want to get a mathematically precise understanding.
It's done.
The very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominate.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using carnivora because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking carnivora.
When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call us today.